practice. Tonight is the last talk in our spring practice period in the spiritual life of power. On the first week, we practiced standing meditation, standing like a tree. And the second week, we practiced walking like a mountain. And the third week, we practiced love flowing like water. And the next week, we practiced lying, resting, being held by the earth. And this weekend, we practiced looking with the eyes of interbeing, seeing all things as ourself, as indeed they are, and the non-harming and compassion that rises from that, being the foundation for our mindfulness trainings. We are each other, and what we do to the world, to others, we do to ourselves. And that is the basis for looking deeply into the mindfulness trainings and the precepts of how they live in our lives and how we are in the world. What we do to others, we do to ourselves. What we do to ourselves, we also do to others. Because we are inextricably connected in more profound ways than we usually realize. We could say it that we live in two worlds at once. Of course, that's not strictly true. It's only one world. But we live indeed as separate entities, individual, with our own stories, our own particular way of appearing in the world, our own natural physicalness that belongs only to us and has never been seen before and will never be seen again. And at the same time, we live in a dimension, a spiritual dimension, whereby we are, what is most true about us is most true about everything. And we are not separate from any of that. Thay speaks about this as being the ultimate dimension. Our bodies that are born and die are unique. Bodies that are born and die, he speaks of as the historical dimension. But in fact, the historical and the ultimate are one. They're not two. And they live right now in this moment. Even as we live right now in this moment. And the foundation of our practice is to realize that for ourselves and let it manifest through us in the world. Every one of us, you know, has a particular karma, you know, having been born in the family we were born in and treated the way we were treated and given the expectations that we were given. And it's unique for all of us. there was many things laid on us, some not so good. But out of that, we have kind of composed a person, a personality, a psyche, that is in response to that. You know, the response to the way we were treated, what was expected of us, the way we needed to defend ourselves, protect ourselves, show ourselves. And we've come to believe that that is who we are. And that that is all that we are. And those aspects of ourselves, those beliefs and ways of being in the world, have come to be our reality. And they're so deeply, deeply ingrained in the muscles and cells of our body that we don't even know sometimes what it is that we've taken on as who we are. But it is separate. It is me and what I want and what I think and how the world should be for me. And that is blessed, no matter what it is. From the very beginning, who we are is blessed. But we somehow, you know, lose track of that in all our ideas and trying to live up to the expectations and trying to make it okay. That we forget that from the very beginning we were blessed. That the universe wanted us somehow and therefore manifested us. Thais says part of our practice is to realize that the universe loves us. So yesterday we saw a talk by Thai, a DVD. It was a really wonderful talk. And he spoke about many of the things that have come up during this practice period, speaking about faith or confidence in ourselves, in our practice, diligence in our practice, what that means, mindfulness, concentration and insight. And so tonight I'd like to continue on from where Thai left off a bit in talking about, specifically about sitting meditation, but more generally also about mindfulness everywhere, all the time in our lives. Yeah, our awareness is like the sun. And when we are practicing mindfulness, the sun of our awareness shines equally on whatever is there. The sun does not discriminate. It doesn't decide to shine on only this tree or reflect only in this lake, but it shines equally on all trees, all bodies of water, on all people of every color, every faith, and every culture. The sun doesn't discriminate. In our sitting meditation, we also do not discriminate. Our consciousness runs like a river. You know, this thought comes up, and then this feeling comes up, and then we come back to our breath, and then this thought comes up. And if we find ourselves picking and choosing what we want to pay attention to and what we reject, we really shut something down in ourselves. We really push something away about who we are. We discriminate. We say, I want this part of me, but I don't want that part. I like the part of me that's all love, but I sure hate the part of me that's judgmental. I like the part of me that's fully confident, and I don't like the part of me that's insecure. And it's natural that our minds do that. And with our meditation, we shine that light of our mindfulness on our awareness to whatever is there, without discrimination. Sometimes we feel like, well, our mindfulness practice, our meditation is to improve ourselves. And I see this on retreats. In fact, some of the sanghas I've gone to, they send out with their registration form or confirmation letters questionnaires about what would you like to work on in this retreat. And, you know, it's like about fixing something. But meditation is not to work on a problem. It's not to analyze. It's not to fix. And it's not to come up with an explanation. It's simply to shine the light of awareness on what's there. And as I talked about on Saturday, it's all inclusive. We include the calling of the bird. I heard it twice. Did you hear it? It was on cue. I don't get these things. It's to include the sound of the airplane as well. And it's to include all of who we are. Everything. You know, when the sun is shining, clouds dissipate under the light. And the same is true with the light of our awareness. When the light is very bright, when we are very concentrated, then feelings dissipate. Thoughts evaporate. And the sky is open and clear and blue. And that is the basis for understanding what transformation is. Our feelings, our thoughts, our self-identifications, the things that we don't even see about ourselves, when we're paying attention and a thought comes up, we see it, we know it's there, we recognize it. And then we come back to our breath. And the thought might come again. And we're with it in the sense of we acknowledge it, we recognize it, we welcome it, and then we come back to our breath. And bit by bit, in doing that, our mind becomes more and more concentrated. And when our mind becomes very concentrated, mind and object become one. And dualistic thinking falls away. And when it's no longer my feeling and myself, but it's just that place of one-pointed focus, then the embracing of the feeling or the thought happens. When Tai, in his talk yesterday, was speaking about there being a seed and mindfulness as one energy and mindfulness being a second energy that surrounds it, it's like the feeling and mindfulness become absolutely one with no separation at all. And the mindfulness is like Kuan Yin. It's like whatever is here, I am here for it. I will hear it. I will hold it in my heart of love. And if it's a thought of I'm not good enough, I did that wrong, in concentration, it might become bigger. It might become I do everything wrong. I always have been wrong. But Kuan Yin is right there, embracing that. And the feeling, the self-identification, the old belief about ourselves, is healed. And we might weep. I think everyone who truly practices does weep. Because the weeping is the releasing of that old belief that we see has nothing to do with who we truly are. It loses all its power. The other morning, I went outside, and on the car, the windshield was completely frosted over. And it was beautiful frosting. You know, it was like the frost almost looked like feathers. But when I got in the car, I couldn't see anything. I couldn't drive, I couldn't go anywhere because everything was clouded over with those frosted, feathery patterns. And eventually the sun hit the car. And bit by bit that frost melted away. And when the frost was melted off the windshield, then I truly could see. I could see what was really there. And then I could move. And it's like that with concentration. With the light of our awareness, the clouds of our self-delusion clear away. And we see a vast, spacious sky, the clearly luminous mind that we have always been part of, always been an expression of. when we touch that, we know that truly that we have always been blessed from the very beginning and blessed. Yeah, physics is really interesting because, you know, a lot of the things that, you know, we talk about in Buddhism, they also are talking about now in quantum physics and the new way of understanding in physics. One of the most interesting things that physics says, the quantum mechanics says, is that whenever there is a particle of matter, subatomic particles, the smallest things they can see, that when someone is observing them, when they are being observed, they change. That they are affected by the observer. That there's really no separation between observed and observer. And in our meditation, it's the same thing. You know, we don't create any separation from ourself at all. And yet we have to be focused. And that's why it's so essential that we have that light of mindfulness to keep coming back. Keep coming back to this breath. Keep coming back to this step. Hearing the sound of the bird. Each song. It's not bird song out there. It's like this tweet, 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 tweet. And keep coming back meticulously over and over again. And in that, we create a huge amount of space because we're no longer thinking, I didn't do it right, I should have said this, or that person drives me up a wall, or here I am being a really good meditator. Whatever we are doing, you know, self-identifying over and over and over again, we create a lot of space when we keep coming back to the present moment, back to this breath, as though our life depended upon it, and our true life does depend upon it. Our true realization of our life depends upon it. This breath, coming back over and over again. And space becomes really big. We become very, very spacious. And then what needs to be heard, what needs to be seen, what needs to be recognized comes to visit us. The parts of ourselves that we've cut off, the parts that we want to change, the things we don't like, the unconscious parts that have lain unconscious for so long but have been directing our life. And if we can keep coming back, then those move closer and closer. Because coming back and being open and listening is becoming Kuan Yin. And where there is suffering, then it feels safe. We have to be concentrated because otherwise that unconscious suffering will just sort of, whatever we've done, whatever we've built up is a way of keeping it away, will immediately kick in. And that's okay if that happens, then we just come back to our breath. In some ways it doesn't matter at all. But as we become more spacious inside, like the night sky, able to hold or welcome whatever's there. Able to surround the whole earth in its sparkling beneficence. When bit by bit, what has been unrecognized, unrealized, will come closer to us. And as as we shine the light of our awareness on it, it will bit by bit be transformed. And understanding arises out of that. And when understanding is there, you know, there's forgiveness, there's acceptance, and at the most profound level, there's love. So we have to arrange our lives in such a way that we can stand like a tree, walk like a mountain, let our love flow like a river, rest and be held by the earth, and look with the eyes of interbeing. In that way, we create the conditions for us to begin to see that we have never been separate, that there is no such subject, no object, that we live as form in the vast, luminous, empty mind. At the same time, at the exact same time. In physics, when they look at particles, they see that they exist as separate individual particles, and at the same time, they exist as a wave, at the exact same time. And it's like us too. At the exact same time, we live as an individual, separate life that is born, that dies, that has karma, that casts a shadow, that is imperfect, that makes messes, and at the exact same time, we are the Buddha. We have never been born. We will never die. We have been perfect from the very beginning. We are the lotus. We are the blue sky. We are the call of a bird. We are the suffering. And all of it is blessed. All of it is blessed. That insight is the basis of the power of our spiritual life. That understanding is the power of the spiritual life. And to be able to be completely free in this separate individual body to respond each moment to what's right in front of us with all the blessedness of love. Is the gift of that realization. In the Heart Sutra, it says form is emptiness. Emptiness is form. Form is exactly emptiness. Emptiness is exactly form. We could say we live in two worlds at once, but that's too many words. And it takes us away from the truth that it is just one reality. And it manifests each moment anew. And we are part of that. And it is blessed. And you are blessed. So there's a little bit of time for questions, but I wanted to say that, you know, there was a sheet that went out this week, I think for week 9. I said that it was an 8-week, but it turned out into a 9-week practice period. you can continue practicing, smiling. This week as well, and continue with the practices that we've had through this whole 9 weeks together, 8 weeks together, and including being with your Dharma buddy, and walking in nature, watching spring open up, unfold. And you might want to continue that past the 9 weeks as well. Find ways to arrange your life so that you can. And in doing that, you know, we move into sort of a more open place, and then when we have an opportunity to be on retreat, and there's many opportunities coming up soon in the next couple of months, we're already a lot more deeply settled, and when we step into retreat, we're already concentrated, and then we are able to realize some of the fruits of having done a practice period and maintained that practice going forward. It's really wonderful. So I really encourage you to continue with that through May, and then come and join us at Mountain Lamp for the longer retreat, what you can of the longer retreat. And I think you will then see that, you know, what Thay is telling us is true. And it's true in your own being. It's true in your own life. And by looking, you know, inside is where you find it, not by reading books and chasing after ideas. By coming back to yourself and including everything that's there. So please keep up the practice of this period. Does anyone have any questions?
Yesterday, Saturday, we gave a Dharma talk, and both Gail and I stopped at something he said, and like to hear more about it. And I'm afraid I can't give you the context, but you said there's no inherent meaning. Does anyone remember any of the rest of it? But stop that.
It's like there's no inherent self from the very beginning. And what that means is we're completely free to choose. And what we choose is what creates the meaning of our lives. And that is both a little bit of responsibility, hence the 5 mindfulness trainings. But it's also a tremendous joy, a tremendous freedom, and thrilling adventure.
It's so, would you say that there's no attached meaning? There is a meaning, but there's nothing it's specifically attached to.
There's nothing.
Nothing.
The very beginning. Yeah, there are 3 existential questions that we have as human beings, I think. And our the first one is our basic aloneness. And, you know, that's that separate self. And we feel separate, and often we feel very alone. And if there is, in some real sense, truth to that, that we are alone. The second question has to do with, our birth and our death. Why do we die? What happens after we die? You know. And then the third is what is the meaning of our lives? And I think those are pretty profound questions that if we are thinking about our lives, they come up as real questions. And often having questions like that is what leads us to practice. And when we let those sorts of things bubble up, I know for me it was my aloneness was the real rub that got me practicing. And I know for other people it's looking in the mirror and seeing that they're going to die. And other people, it's sort of that sense of depression and despair of, what's the meaning, all of this. And our practice answers all of those questions. We see that from the very beginning we were never alone. It's not possible to be alone. We're part of everything, and everything is a part of us. And so that becomes our true home, is that deep, interpenetrating interconnectedness of ourselves with all things. How wonderful, how joyous that is. And the second thing we see is that what is most true about us never is born and cannot die. Is undying, is unborn, is illuminating everything. Thay uses the metaphor of, the wave on the ocean, that all waves are made up of water. If we just identify with the wave, well, the wave is born and the wave dies, of course. But if we identify with the ocean water, we see that It's just water. Nothing's born, nothing dies. And that, the experience of that is love. And the third thing is that there is no meaning. And that also is wonderful and joyous. If we put our conceptual mind to it, it might scare us, but the experience of it is absolute, total freedom. And what arises out of that freedom is deep compassion and love. How else can we respond in the world? We are all things. I am you and you are me. You know, Thay's beautiful poem, "Please Call Me By My True Names." Yeah. I am the frog swimming in the ocean. In the river, I am the snake that eats the frog. I am the child starving to death. I am the merchant selling the arms. I am the wheat that feeds the starving child. I am the person whose taxpayer dollars goes to build arms. We're all of it. We're everything. When we think about it, you know, it's with our separate individual focus. It's like when we just identify with our small self, and that's, we see all the thoughts of that come up about that person's a total jerk, I don't want anything to do with them. Ooh, that's a Muslim, he must be a terrorist. I really don't like that. Or, you know, just all our self-identified. You know, I'm not good enough. I'm going to try to be the best thing I can. You know, all those thoughts that are sort of really self-identified that are discriminative. When we look at suffering that way, it's just, we have that same sort of place of cut-offness from it. But when we and we can touch this in any moment, begin to touch our compassion, begin to touch our inclusiveness, our love, then when we look at suffering with the eyes of compassion, it is the light of the sun, and there is healing there that happens. The suffering is not separate from the oneness, the wholeness, the blessedness. Without the suffering, there is no reason to practice. There is no reason to ask the deep questions that allow us to see what's beneath the suffering, which is the great blessedness of everything, the illumination of love. And we can realize that through our practice, that suffering and non-suffering are not separate. It's the lotus is not separate from the mud. There's many metaphors that point to that. When we ourselves don't realize that we too are the Buddha, we too are the sacred nature of everything, then we only see ourselves as separate and suffering, or unhappy, or confused, or striving, or whatever it is. With our practice, there we come back. We include all things until we see past that separation of suffering. And we see then that all of it is held in love. When we don't see that, it provides a tremendous energy for us to be practicing. It is the impetus behind all spiritual traditions. Answering these three deep existential questions. And the thing that is the miracle of being a human being is that we are able to see through the illusion of separate suffering self into the vast, spacious ocean that is our true nature. That is the truth. And we are able to manifest that in the world. And that creates meaning.
I'm a little confused about that. Not pursuing ideas. Because I pursue ideas
a lot. A source of confusion. I think you've answered.
That ideas are really important to me. And many of my ideas are about Buddhism and about my practice. Some are not. Sometimes they merge. Often they merge these days. I would have such a terrible hard time giving up that part of myself. It brings me joy. I think it brings other people joy. It helps me communicate. I'm puzzled.
That's a really good question. What I said earlier is we don't cut off anything of ourselves. We don't cut off anything of ourselves. It's when we think that's all we are. We believe in that as the ultimate reality. We get confused. And then we try to make something out of it. And that is a source of suffering. When that's our only identification, we're more than that too. You are more than that. You are much more than that. And if you get caught there, then that's that obscures what is more true about you.
I do think I understand that because I can. I see the temptation. And I see friends, other artists who are caught in it. And I think it's always there as a possibility. It's because it's so easy to delude yourself. As an artist, I think you're sort of given freedom, or give yourself freedom to delude yourself.
There's time for one more question.
What would you suggest in terms of teaching children? I know you mentioned just in your talk this evening about striving and being the best you can be, I find that I throw out those platitudes quite a lot to my kids. And would I be better off to have no expectations, diminished expectations? I mean, do you understand the nature of my question?
Mm-hmm. I think I do. Tell me if I don't answer. Yeah, the point of tonight's talk is that, indeed, of course we have expectations. Of course we strive to be the best we can. And we encourage that in other people. And yet we know there's more than that. That's not all that we're about. That's not even the most important thing about us. And it's really important with children, particularly, to recognize that deeper truth of the miracle of their existence, mm-hmm. and to help them touch that. And have some confidence in their own ability to touch that bigger truth about themselves. But most important is to practice for ourselves. Most important is that we come back to ourselves and we don't focus so much on the outside, the externals. Okay. And in coming back and realizing ourselves, our true nature, then that makes it, you know, easier to, for, as Dogen says, a person like that, when they come into an assembly, the assembly, people take notice. Yeah. That realization shines through how we are in the world. And that's really the best way to influence kids. Thank you all very much for excellent questions, wonderful practice, being together here as Sangha, supporting each other. It's really been a lovely time, this spring practice period. I'm going to turn this off.